As he listened, Dorcas's mouth slowly dropped open. It was magnificent in its way, that plan. It was like a machine where every single bit was perfectly made, but had been put together by a one-handed gnome in the dark. It was crammed full of good ideas, which you couldn't sensibly argue with, but they had been turned upside down. The trouble was, they were still ones you couldn't sensibly argue with, because the basically good idea was still in there somewhere. Nisodemus wanted to rebuild the store. The gnomes stood in horrified admiration as the stationery explained that, yes, Abbot Gerda had been right. When they left the store, they had taken Arnold Bross Est-1905 with them inside their heads, and if they could show him that they really cared about the store, he would come out again and put a stop to all these problems and re-establish the store here in this green, unpleasant land. That was how it all arrived in Dorcas's head, anyway. He'd long ago decided that if you spent all your time listening to what people actually said, you'd never have time to work out what they meant. "But it wouldn't mean building the whole store," said Nisodemus, his eyes shining like two bright black marbles. "They could change the quarry in other ways, go back to living in proper departments instead of any old how all over the place. Put up some signs. Get back to the good old ways. Make Arnold Bross Est-1905 feel at home. Build the store inside their heads." Gnomes didn't often go mad. Dorcas vaguely recalled an elderly gnome who had once decided that he was a teapot, but he'd changed his mind after a few days. Nisodemus, though, had definitely been getting too much fresh air. It was obvious that one or two other gnomes thought so, too. "I don't quite see," said one of them, "how Arnold Bross Est-1905 is going to stop these humans. No offence meant. Did humans interfere with us when we were in the store?" demanded Nisodemus. "Well, no, but because—" "Then trust in Arnold Bross Est-1905." "But that didn't stop the store being demolished, did it?" said a voice. "When it came to it, you all trusted Masklin and Gerda and the truck, and yourselves. Nisodemus is always telling you how clever you are. Try and be clever, then." Dorcas realized it was Grimmer. He'd never seen anyone so angry. She pushed her way through the apprehensive gnomes until she was face to face, or at least, since Nisodemus was standing on something and she wasn't, face to chest. He was one of those people who liked standing on things. "What will actually happen, then?" she shouted. "When you've built the store, what will happen? Humans came into the store, you know." Nisodemus's mouth opened and shut for a while. Then he said, "But they obeyed the regulations, yes, that's what they did, and things were better then." She glared at him. "You don't really think people are going to accept that, do you?" she said. There was silence. "You've got to admit," said an elderly gnome, very slowly, "things were better then." The gnomes shuffled their feet. That was all you could hear. Just people shuffling their feet. "They just accepted it," said Grimmer. "Just like that. No one's bothered about the council anymore. They just do what he tells them." Now she was in Dorcas's workspace, under a bench in the old quarry garage. "My little sanctuary," he always called it. "My little nook." Bits of wire and tin were scattered everywhere. The wall was covered with scrawls done with a bit of pencil lead. Dorcas sat and twiddled a bit of wire aimlessly. "You're being hard on people," he said quietly. "You shouldn't yell at them like that. They've been through a lot. They get all confused if you shout at them. The council was all right for when times were good," he shrugged. "And without Masklin and Gerda and Angelo, well, it hardly seems worthwhile."
"But after all that's happened," she waved her arms, "to act so stupidly, just because he's offered them—"
"A bit of comfort," said Dorcas. He shook his head. You couldn't explain things like this to people like Grimmer. Nice girl, bright head on her, but she kept thinking that everyone else was as passionate about things as she was. All people really wanted, Dorcas considered, was to be left alone. The world was quite difficult enough as it was without people going around trying to make it better all the time. Masklin had understood that. He knew the way to make people do what you wanted was to make them think it was their idea. If there was one thing that got right up our gnome's nose, it was someone saying, "Here is a really sensible idea. Why are you too stupid to understand?" It wasn't that people were stupid. It was just that people were people. "Come on," he said wearily. "Let's go and see how the signs are getting on." The whole of the floor of one of the big sheds had been turned over to the making of the signs. Or rather, the signs. Another thing Nicodemus was good at was giving words capital letters. You could hear him doing it. Dorcas had to admit that the signs were a pretty good idea, though. He felt guilty about thinking this. He'd thought that when Nicodemus had summoned him and asked if there was any paint in the quarry. Only now the quarry was being called the New Store. Dorcas had said, "There's some old tins, white and red mainly, under one of the benches. We might be able to lever the tops off."
"Then do it. It is very important. We must make signs," said the stationery.
"Signs, right," said Dorcas.
"Cheer the place up a bit, you mean?"
"No! Sorry, I just thought—"
"Signs for the gate!"
Dorcas scratched his chin.
"The gate?" he said.
"Humans obey signs," said Nicodemus, calming down.
"We know that. Did they not obey the signs in the store?"
"Most of them," agreed Dorcas. Dogs and pushchairs must be carried had always puzzled him. Lots of humans didn't carry either of them.
"Signs make humans do things," said Nicodemus, "or stop doing things. So get to work, good Dorcas. Signs that say no."
Dorcas had given this a lot of thought as teams of gnomes sweated to pry the lids off the paint-streaked tins. They still had the highway code from the truck, and there were plenty of signs in there, and he could remember some of the signs from the store. Then there was a stroke of luck. Normally the gnomes stayed at floor level, but Dorcas had taken to sending his young assistants onto the big desk in the manager's office occasionally, where there were useful scraps of paper. Now he needed to work out what the signs should say. Sacco and Newty came back with the news. They'd found more signs. A great, big, grubby notice pinned to the wall, covered with signs.
"Masses of them," Sacco said, coming back out of breath. "And you know what, sir? You know what? I read what it said on the notice, and it said, 'Health and safety at work,' it said. 'Obey these signs,' it said. And it said, 'They are there for your protection.'"
"That's what it said," said Dorcas.
"'For your protection,'" Sacco repeated.
"Can you get it down?"
"There's a coot hook next to it," said Newty enthusiastically. "I bet we could sling a hook up there, and then pull it over towards the window, and then—"
Yes, you're good at that sort of thing," said Dorcas. "Newty could climb like a squirrel. I expect Nicodemus will be very pleased," he added. Nicodemus was, especially with the bit that said, "for your protection." It showed, he said, that Arnold Bros Est 1905 was on their side. Every bit of board and rusty sheet of metal had to be pressed into service. The gnomes went at it cheerfully enough, though, happy to be doing something. Next morning the sun rose to see a variety of signs hanging, not always squarely, on the battered quarry gate. They had been very thorough. The signs said, "No Etonry. Exit this way. Dagna, hard hat area. Blastigan in progress. All lorries report to Wybridge. Slippery when wet. This till closed. Lift out foe order. Beware of flailing rocks. Road fluted." And, one that Dorcas found in a book and was rather proud of, "Unexploded bomb." Just to be on the safe side, though, and without telling Nicodemus, he found some more chain and, in one of the greasy old toolboxes in Jacob's shed, a padlock nearly as big as he was. It took four gnomes to carry it. The chain was massive. Some of the gnomes found Dorcas painstakingly levering it along across the quarry floor, one link at a time. He didn't seem to want to tell them where he found it. The truck turned up around noon. The gnomes waiting in the hedge by the side of the lane saw the driver get out, look at the signs, and... No, that wasn't right. Humans couldn't do that sort of thing. It couldn't be true. But 20 gnomes, peering out from the undergrowth, saw it happen. The human disobeyed the signs. Not only that, it pulled some of them off the gate and threw them away. They watched in astonishment. Even Unexploded Bomb was whirled into the bushes, nearly knocking young Sacco from his perch. The new chain, though, caused the human a few problems. It rattled it once or twice, peered in through the wire mesh of the gate, stamped around for a bit, and then drove off. The gnomes in the bushes cheered, but not too happily. If humans weren't going to do what was expected of them, nothing was right in the world.
"I reckon that's it," said Dorcas when they got back. "I don't like the idea any more than anyone else, but we've got to move. I know humans. That chain won't stop them if they really want to get in. "I absolutely forbid anyone to leave," said Nicodemus.
"But, you see, metal can be cut through," Dorcas began in a reasonable tone of voice.
"Silence!" shouted Nicodemus. "It's your fault, you old fool. You put the chain on the gate."
"Well, you see, it was to stop the—"
"Pardon?" said Dorcas. "If you hadn't put the chain on the gate, the signs would have stopped the human," said Nicodemus. "But you can't expect Arnold Brossest 1905 to help us if we show we don't trust him."
Said Dorcas. What he was thinking was mad. A mad gnome, a dangerously mad gnome. We're not talking about teapots here. He backed out of Nicodemus's presence and was glad to get out into the bitingly cold air. "Everything's going wrong," he thought. "I was left in charge, and now it's all going wrong. We haven't got any proper plans, Maskrin hasn't come back, and it's all going wrong. If humans come into the quarry, they'll find us." Something cold landed on his head. He brushed at it, irritably. "I'll have a word with some of the younger gnomes," he thought. "Maybe going to the barn isn't such a bad idea. We could keep our eyes shut on the way or something." Something else, cold and soft, settled on his neck. "Oh, why are people so complicated?" He looked up and realized that he couldn't see the other side of the quarry. The air was full of white specks that got thicker as he watched. He stared at it in horror. It was snowing. Chapter 8. And Grimmer said, "We have two choices. We can run, or we can hide." And they said, "Which shall we do?" She said, "We shall fight." From the Book of Gnome, Quarries, Chapter 3, verses 7 to 10. It wasn't much of a fall, just one of those nippy little sprinklings that come early in the winter to make it absolutely clear that it is, well, the winter. That's what Granny Morkie said. She'd never been very interested in the council, anyway. She liked to spend her time with the other old people, exchanging grumbles and, as she put it, cheering them up and taking them out of themselves. She strutted around in the snow as if it belonged to her. The other old gnomes watched her in horrified silence. "Course, this is nothing to some of them," she said. "I mind we've had snow. We couldn't walk around in it. We had to dig tunnels. Talk about laugh!"
"And, madam," said a very old gnome gravely, "does it always drop out of the sky like this?"
"Course. Sometimes it gets blown along by the wind. You get great heaps."
We thought, and you see, on the cards, that is, in the store, well, we thought it just sort of appeared on things," said the old gnome. "In a rather jolly and festive way," he added, looking embarrassed.
They watched it pile up. Over the quarry the clouds hung like overstuffed mattresses.
"At least it means we won't have to go to that horrid barn place," said a gnome.
"That's right," said Granny Morkie. "You could catch your death going out in this." She looked cheerful.
The old gnomes grumbled among themselves and scanned the sky anxiously for the first signs of robins or reindeer. The snow closed the quarry in. You couldn't see out across the fields. Dorcas sat in his workshop and stared at the snow piling up against the grubby window, giving the shed a dull grey light.
"Well," he said quietly, "we wanted to be shut away, and now we are. We can't run away, and we can't hide. We ought to have gone when Masklin left."
He heard footsteps behind him. It was Grimmer. She spent a long time near the gate these days, but the snow had driven her indoors at last.
"He wouldn't be able to come," she said. "Not in the snow."
"Yeah, right," said Dorcas uncertainly.
"It's been 8 days now."
"Yes, quite a long time."
"What were you saying when I came in?" she said.
"I was just talking to myself. Does this snow stuff stay for a long time?"
"Granny says it does sometimes. Weeks and weeks, she says."
"Oh."
"When the humans come back, they'll be here for good," said Grimmer.
"Yes," said Dorcas sadly. "Yes, I think you're right."
"How many of us would be able to, you know, go on living here?"
"A couple of dozen, perhaps, if they don't eat much and lie low during the day. There's no food hall, you see," he sighed. "And there won't be much hunting, not with humans around the quarry the whole time. All the game up in the thickets will run away."
"But there's thousands of us."
Dorcas shrugged.
"It's hard enough for me to walk through this snow," he said. "There's hundreds of older gnomes who'll never do it. And the young ones come to that."
"So we've got to stay just like Nicodemus wants," said Grimmer.
"Yes. Stay and hope. Perhaps the snow will be gone. We could make a run for the thickets or something," he said vaguely.
"'We could stay and fight,' said Grimmer.
Dorcas growled. "'Oh, that's easy. We fight all the time. Bicker, bicker, bicker. That's gnomish nature for you.'
"'I mean, fight the humans. Fight for the quarry.'
There was a long pause. Then Dorcas said, "'But us?
Fight humans?
Yes.
But they're humans.
Yes.
But they're so much bigger than we are,' said Dorcas desperately.
"'Then they'll make better targets,' said Grimmer, her eyes alight. "'And we're faster than them, and smarter than them, and we know they exist, and we have,' she added, "'the element of surprise.'
"'The what?' said Dorcas, totally lost.
"'The element of surprise. They don't know we're here,' she explained. He gave her a sidelong glance.
"'You've been reading strange books again,' he said.
"'Well, it's better than sitting around wringing our hands and saying, "'Oh, dear, the humans are coming, and we shall all be squashed.'
"'That's all very well,' said Dorcas. "'But what are you suggesting? "'Bashing them over the head would be really tricky, take it from me.'
"'Not their heads,' said Grimmer. Dorcas stared at her. "'Fight humans?' It was such a novel idea, it was hard to get your mind around it.
But, well, there was that book, wasn't there? The one Maskelyne had found in the store, the one that had given him the idea for driving the truck.
What was it called?
Gulliver's Travels. And there'd been this picture of a human lying down with what looked like gnomes tying it up with hundreds of ropes. Not even the oldest gnomes could remember it ever happening. It must have been a long time ago.
A snag struck him.
"'Hang on a minute,' he said. "'If we start fighting humans,' his voice tailed off.
"'Yes,' said Grimmer impatiently.
"'They'll start fighting us, won't they? "'I know they're not very bright, "'but it'll dawn on them that something's happening, "'and they'll fight back. "'Retaliation, that's called.'
"'That's right,' said Grimmer. "'And that's why it's vitally important "'we retaliate right at the start.'
Dorcas thought about this. "'It seemed a logical idea.'
"'But only in self-defence,' he said. "'Only in self-defence, even with humans. "'I don't want there to be any unnecessary suffering.'
"'I suppose so,' she said.
"'Do you really think we could fight humans?'
"'Oh, yes.'
"'So how?'
Grimmer bit her lip.
She said. "'Young Sacco and his friends, can you trust them?'
"'They're keen lads, and lassies, one or two of them,' he smiled. "'Always ready for something new.'
"'Right, then we shall need some nails.'
"'You've really been thinking hard, haven't you?' said Dorcas.
He was almost in awe. Grimmer was often bad-tempered. He thought perhaps it was because her mind worked very fast sometimes, and she was impatient with people who weren't keeping up. But now she was furious. You could begin to feel sorry for any humans who got in her way.
"'I've been doing a lot of reading,' she said.
"'Yes, I can see,' said Dorcas. "'But, I wonder if it wouldn't be more sensible to—'
"'We're not going to run away again,' she said flatly. "'We shall fight them in the lane. "'We shall fight them at the gates. "'We shall fight them in the quarry. "'And we shall never surrender.'
"'What does surrender mean?' said Dorcas desperately.
"'We don't know the meaning of surrender,' said Grimmer.
"'Well, I don't,' said Dorcas.
Grimmer leaned against the wall.
"'Do you want to hear something strange?' she said.
Dorcas thought about it.
"'I don't mind,' he said.
"'There's books about us.'
"'Like Gulliver, you mean?'
"'No, that was about a human. "'About us, I mean. "'Ordinary-sized people like us, "'but wearing all green suits "'and with little knobbly stalks on their heads. "'Sometimes humans put out bowls of milk for us, "'and we do all the housework for them. "'And they have wings like bees. "'That's what gets put in books about us. "'They call us pixies. "'It's in a book called "'Fairy Tales for Little Folk.'
"'I don't think the wings would work,' said Dorcas doubtfully. "'I don't think you could get the lifting power.'
"'And they think we live in mushrooms,'
Grimmer finished.
"'Hm? Doesn't sound very practical to me,' said Dorcas.
"'And they think we repair shoes.'
"'That's a bit more like it,' said Dorcas. "'Good solid work.'
"'And the book said we paint the flowers to make them pretty colours,' said Grimmer.
Dorcas stared at her.
"'Nah,' he said eventually. "'I've looked at the colours on flowers. They're definitely built in.'
"'We're real,' said Grimmer. "'We do real things. Why do you think that sort of thing goes in books?'
"'Search me,' said Dorcas. "'I only read manuals. It's not a proper book, I've always said, unless it's got lists and part numbers in it.'
"'If ever humans do catch us, that's what we'll become,' said Grimmer. "'Sweet little people, painting flowers. They won't let us be anything else. They'll turn us into little people,' she sighed.
Do you ever get the feeling you'll never know everything you ought to know?
Oh, yes, all the time.
Grimmer frowned. I know one thing, she said. When Maskelyne comes back, he's going to have somewhere to come back to.
Oh, said Dorcas.
Oh, he repeated.
Oh, I see.
It was bitterly cold in Jacob's lair. Other gnomes never came in because it was draughty and stunk unpleasantly. That suited Dorcas fine. He padded across the floor and under the huge tarpaulin where Jacob lived. It took quite a long time to climb up to his preferred perch on the monster, even using the bits of wooden string he'd painstakingly tied to it. Him. He sat down and waited until he got his breath back.
"I only want to help people," he said quietly. "Like giving them things like electricity and making their lives better. But they never say thank you, you know. They wanted me to paint signs, so I painted signs. Now Grimmer wants to fight humans. She's got lots of ideas out of books. And all she's doing it to help forget about Maskelyne, but no good will come of it, you mark my words. But if I don't help, things will only be even worse. I don't want anybody to get hurt. People like us can't be repaired as easily as people like you."
He drummed his heels on Jacob's... what would it be? Jacob's neck, probably.
"It's all right for you," he said, "sleeping quietly here all the time, having a nice rest."
He stared at Jacob for a long while. Then, very quietly, he said, "I wonder." 5 long minutes went past. Dorcas appeared and reappeared among the complicated shadows, muttering to himself, saying things like, "That's dead. That's no good. We need a new battery." And, "Seems okay, nothing that a good clean couldn't put right," and, "Not much in your tank." Finally, he walked out from under the dusty cloth and rubbed his hands together. "Everyone has a purpose in life," he thought. "It's what keeps them going. Nisodemus wants things to be as they were. Grimmer wants Maskelyne back. And Maskelyne? No one knows exactly what it is that Maskelyne wants, except that it's very big. But they all have this purpose. If you have a purpose in life, you can feel 6 inches tall. And now I've found one. Gosh!"
The human came back later, and he did not come alone. There was the small truck and a much larger lorry with the words Blackberry Stone and Gravel PLC painted on the side. Its tyres turned the thin coating of snow into glistening mud. It jolted up the lane, slowed down as it came out into the open area in front of the quarry gates, and stopped. It wasn't a very good stop. The back of the vehicle swung around and nearly hit the hedge. The engine coughed into silence. There was the sound of hissing, and, very slowly, the lorry sank. 2 humans got out. They walked around the lorry, looking at each tyre in turn.
"They're only flat at the bottom," whispered Grimmer in their hiding place in the bushes.
"Don't worry about it," hissed Dorcas. "The thing about tyres is, the flat bit always sinks to the bottom. Amazing what you can do with a few nails, isn't it?"
The smaller truck stopped behind the lorry. 2 humans got out of that, too, and joined the others. One of them was holding the longest pair of pliers Dorcas had ever seen. While the rest of the humans bent down by one of the flat tyres, it strolled up to the gate, fiddled the teeth of the pliers onto the padlock, and squeezed. It was an effort, even for a human, but there was a snap loud enough to be heard in the bushes, and then a long, drawn-out clinking noise as the chain fell away. Dorcas groaned. He'd had great hopes of that chain. It was Jacob's, at least. It was in a big yellow box bolted to part of Jacob, so presumably it had belonged to Jacob. But it had been the padlock that had broken, not the chain. Dorcas felt oddly proud about that.
"I don't understand it," Grimmer muttered. "They can see they're not wanted, so why are they so stupid?"
"It's not as if there isn't masses of stone around," agreed Sacco.
The human pulled at the gate and swung it enough to allow itself inside.
"It's going to the manager's office," said Sacco. "It's going to make noises in the telephone."
"No, it's not," Dorcas prophesied.
"But it will be ringing up order," said Sacco. "It'll be saying, inhuman, I mean, it'll be saying, some of our wheels have gone flat."
"No," said Dorcas. "It'll be saying, why doesn't the telephone work?"
"Why doesn't the telephone work?"
said Newty.
"Because I know what wires to cut," said Dorcas. "Look, it's coming back out."
They watched it walk around the sheds. The snow had covered the gnomes' sad attempts at cultivation. There were plenty of gnome tracks, though, like little bird trails in the snow. The human didn't notice them. Humans hardly ever noticed anything.
tripwires," said Grimmer.
"What?" said Dorcas.
"Tripwires. We should put tripwires down. The bigger they are," said Grimmer, "the harder they fall."
"Not on us, I hope," said Dorcas.
"No. We could put more nails down," said Grimmer.
"Good grief."
The humans clustered around the stricken lorry. Then they appeared to reach a decision and walked back to the Land Rover. They got in. It couldn't go forward, but reversed slowly down the lane, turned around in a field gateway, and headed back to the main road. The lorry was left alone. Dorcas breathed out.
"I was afraid one of them would stay," he said.
"They'll come back," said Grimmer. "You've always said it. Humans'll come back and mend the wheels, or whatever it is they do."
"Then we'd better get on with it," said Dorcas. "Come on, you lot."
He stood up and trotted towards the lane. To Sacco's surprise, Dorcas was whistling under his breath.
"Now, the important thing is to make sure they can't move it," he said, as they ran to keep up. "If they can't move it, it means it stays blocking the lane, and if it stays blocking the lane, they can't get any more machines in."
"Good thinking," said Grimmer, in a slightly puzzled voice.
"We must immobilize it," said Dorcas. "We'll take out the battery first. No electricity, no go."
"Right," said Sacco.
"It's a big square thing," said Dorcas. "It'll need 8 of you at least. Don't drop it, whatever you do."
"Why not?" said Grimmer. "We want to smash it, don't we?"
Said Dorcas urgently, like a motor trying to get started. "No, because it could be dangerous. Yes, dangerous. Yes, because of the acid and what not. We must take it out very carefully, and I'll find somewhere safe to put it. Yes, very safe. Off you go now. 2 gnomes to a spanner." They trotted off.
"What else can we do?" said Grimmer.
"We'd better drain the fuel out," said Dorcas firmly, as they walked under the shadow of the lorry. It was much smaller than the one that had brought them out of the store, but still quite big enough. He wandered around until he was under the enormous swelling bulk of the fuel tank. 4 of the young gnomes had dragged an empty can out of the bushes. Dorcas called them over and pointed to the tank above them.
"There'll be a nut on there somewhere," he said. "It'll be to let the fuel out. Get a span around it. Make sure the can's underneath it first."
They nodded enthusiastically and got to work. Gnomes are good climbers and remarkably strong for their size.
"And try not to spill any, please," Dorcas shouted up after them.
"I don't see why that matters," said Grimmer, behind him. "All we want to do is get it out of the lorry. Where it goes doesn't matter, does it?"
She gave him another thoughtful look. Dorcas blinked back at her, his mind racing.
"Ah," he said. Because it's dangerous stuff. We don't want it polluting things, do we? Best to put it carefully in a can and—"
"Keep it safe," said Grimmer suspiciously.
"Right, right," said Dorcas, who was starting to sweat. "Good idea. Now let's just go over here."
There was a sudden rush of air and a thump from right behind them. The lorry's battery landed where they had been standing.
"Sorry, Dorcas," Sacco called down. "It was a lot heavier than we thought. It got away from us."
"You idiots!" Grimmer shouted.
"Yes, you idiots!" shouted Dorcas. "You might have damaged it. Just you come down here right now and get it into the hedge, quickly."
"He might have damaged us," said Grimmer.
Yes, that's what I meant, of course," said Dorcas vaguely. "You wouldn't mind organising them a bit, would you? They're good boys, but always a bit too enthusiastic, if you know what I mean."
He wandered off into the shadow, his head tilted backwards.
"Well,"
said Grimmer. She looked around at Sacco and his friends, who were sheepishly climbing down again.
"Don't just stand there," she said. "Get it into the hedge. Hasn't Dorcas told you about using levers? Very important things. It's amazing what you can do with levers. We use them a lot on a long drive."
Her voice trailed off. She turned and looked at the distant figure of Dorcas, and her eyes narrowed. "The cunning old devil is up to something," she thought.
"Oh, just get on with it," she said, and ran off to Dorcas.
He was standing under the truck's engine, staring intently into the masses of rusting pipework. As she came up, she distinctly heard him say, "Now, what else do we need?"
"How do you mean, need?" said Grimmer quietly.
"Oh, to help Jack—"
Dorcas stopped and turned around slowly.
"I mean, what else do we need to do to make the thing totally immobile?" he said stonily. "That was what I meant."
"You're not planning to drive this truck, are you?" said Grimmer.
"Don't be silly. Where'd we go? It'd never get across the fields to the barn."
"Well, all right then."
"I just want to have a look around it. Time spent collecting knowledge is never wasted," said Dorcas primly.
He stepped out into the light on the other side of the truck and looked up.
"Well, well," he said.
"What is it?"
"They left the door open. I suppose they thought it was all right because they'd be coming back."
Grimmer followed his gaze. The truck's door was slightly ajar. Dorcas looked around at the hedge behind them. "Help me find a big enough stick," he said. "I reckon we could climb up there and have a look around."
"A look around? What do you expect to find?"
"You never know till you've looked," said Dorcas philosophically. He peered back underneath the truck. "How are you all doing under there? We need a hand here."
Sacco staggered up.
"We managed to get the battery thing behind the hedge," he said. "And the can's nearly full. Smells horrible. There's still lots coming out. Can you get the screw back in?"
"Noti tried, and she got all covered in yuck."
"Let it go on the road, then," said Dorcas.
"Hang on. You said that it would be dangerous," said Grimmer. "It's dangerous until you fill the can up, is it? And then not dangerous at all?"
"Look, you wanted me to stop the lorry, and I've stopped the lorry," said Dorcas. "So just shut up, will you?"
Grimmer looked at him in horror.
"What did you say?" she said.
Dorcas swallowed. "Oh, well, if you were going to get shouted at, you might as well get your money's worth."
"I said just shut up," he said quietly. "I don't want to be rude, but you do go on at people.
I'm sorry, but that's how it is. I'm helping you. I'm not asking you to help me, but at least you can let me get on with things instead of badgering me the whole time. And you never say please or thank you, either. People are a bit like machines," he added solemnly, while her face went redder. "And words like please and thank you are just like grease. They make them work better. Is that all right?"
He turned to the boys, who were looking very embarrassed.
"Find a stick long enough to reach up to the cab," he said. "Please."
They fell over themselves to obey. Chapter 9.
The younger gnomes spoke, saying, "Would that we were the gnomes our fathers were, to ride upon the truck, and what was it like?" And Dorcas said, "It was scary." That was what it was like. From the Book of Gnome, Strange Frogs, Chapter 2, Verses 3-5.
It was pretty much like the cab of the truck that had brought them from the store. It brought back old memories.
"Wow," said Sacco, "and we all drove one of these?"
700 of us," said Dorcas proudly. "Your dad was one of them. You were in the back with your mothers. All you lads were."
"I'm not a lad," said Newty.
"Sorry," said Dorcas. "Slip of the tongue. In my day, girls stayed at home most of the time. Not that I've got anything at all against them getting out and about a bit now," he added hurriedly, not wanting another grimmer on his hands. "I'm not against that at all."
"I wish I'd been older on the drive," said Newty. "It must have been amazing."
"It terrified the life out of me," said Dorcas.
The others wandered around the cab like tourists in a cathedral, gawping. Newty tried to press a pedal.
"Amazing," she said under her breath.
"Sacco, you get up there and take those keys out," said Dorcas. "The rest of you, no lallygagging. These humans will be back any time. Newty, stop making those brum-brum noises. I'm sure nice girls shouldn't make those kind of noises," he added lamely.
Sacco swarmed at the steering wheel post and wrestled the keys out of the ignition while the rest of the boys poked around in the cab. Grimmer wasn't with them. She hadn't wanted to come up into the cab. She'd gone very quiet, in fact. She'd stayed down in the lane with a sullen look on her face. But it had needed saying, Dorcas told himself. He looked around the cab. "Let's see," he thought. "We've got the battery, we've got the fuel. Was there anything else Jacob needed?"
"Come on, everyone," he called. "Let's be getting out of here. Newty, stop trying to move things all the time. It'd take all of you to shift the gear lever. Come on, before the humans come back."
He made his way to the door and heard a click behind him.
"I said, come on. What do you think you're doing?"
The young gnomes stared at him wide-eyed.
"We're seeing if we can move the gear lever, Dorcas," said Newty. "If you press this knob, you can."
"Don't press the knob. Don't press the knob."
The first inkling Grimmer had that something was going wrong was a nasty little crunching sound and a change in the light. The truck was moving, not very fast, because the two front tyres were flat, but the lane was steep. It was moving all right, and just because it had started off slowly didn't mean there wasn't something huge and unstoppable about it. She stared at it in horror. The lane ran between high banks all the way down to the big road and the railway.
"I said, don't press it. Did I say press it? I said, don't press it."
The terrified gnomes stared at him, their open mouths a row of O's.
"It's not the gear lever, it's the handbrake, you idiots."
Now they could all hear the crunching noise and feel the slight vibration.
"Eh,"
said Sacco, his voice shaking.
"What's a handbrake, Dorcas?"
"It keeps it stopped on hills and things. Don't just stand there, help me push it back up."
The cab was, very gently, beginning to sway from side to side. The lorry was definitely moving. The handbrake wasn't. Dorcas heaved on it until blue and purple spots flashed in front of his eyes.
"I just gave the knob on the end a push," Newty babbled. "I only wanted to see what it did."
"Yes, yes, all right." Dorcas stared around. What he needed was a lever. What he needed was about 50 gnomes. What he needed most of all was not to be here.
He staggered across the bouncing floor to the doorway and cautiously peered out. The hedge was moving past quite gently, as if it wasn't in a particular hurry to get anywhere, but the surface of the lane already had a blurred look. We could probably jump, he thought, and if we're lucky we won't break anything. If we're even luckier, we'll avoid the wheels. How lucky do I feel right at this minute? Not very. Sacco joined him.
"Perhaps if we took a good running jump," he began.
There was a thump as the lorry hit the bank, heeled over, and then bounced back onto the lane. The gnomes struggled to their feet.
"On the other hand, perhaps not a good idea," said Sacco. "What shall we do now, Dorcas?"
"Just hang on," said Dorcas. "I think the banks will keep it on the lane, and I suppose it'll just roll to a halt eventually." He sat down suddenly as the truck bounced off the bank again. "You wanted to know what a truck ride was like? Well, now you know." There was another thump. The branch of a tree caught the door, swung it open, and then, with a terrible metallic noise, ripped it off.
"Was it like this?"
shouted Newty above the noise. To Dorcas's amazement, now that the immediate danger was over, she seemed to be quite enjoying it. "We're bringing up new gnomes," he thought. "They're not so scared of things as we were. They know about a bigger world." He coughed.
"Well, apart from it being in the dark, and we could see where we were going, yes," he said. "I just think we all ought to hang on to something, just in case it gets bumpy."
The lorry rolled down the lane and onto the main road. A car skidded into the hedge to avoid it. Another lorry managed to stop at the end of four long streaks of scorched rubber on the wet road. None of the gnomes in the cab noticed this at the time. All they felt was another thump as the lorry bounced gently off the far side of the road and down the lane that ran towards the railway, where, with red lights flashing, the barriers were coming down. Sacco peered out of the stricken doorway.
"We've just crossed over a road," he said.
"Ah," said Dorcas.
"I just saw a car run into the back of another car, and a lorry ended up going sideways,"
Sacco went on.
"Ah, lucky we got over, then," said Dorcas. "There's some dangerous drivers around."
The gritty sound of the flat tyres rolling over gravel gradually slowed down. There was the snap of something breaking behind the lorry, a couple of bumps, and then another thump that brought them to a halt. They heard a low, booming noise. Gnomes hear things differently to humans, and the shrill clanging of the level crossings' warning alarms sounded to them like the mournful tolling of an ancient bell.
"We've stopped," said Dorcas.
He thought, "We could have pressed the brake pedal. We could have looked for something to press it with and pressed it. I must be getting too old. Oh, well.
Come on, no hanging around. We can jump out. You youngsters can, anyway." "Why, what are you going to do?"
said Sacco.
"I'm going to wait until you've all jumped out, and then I'm going to tell you to catch me," said Dorcas pleasantly. "I'm not as young as I was. Now off you go."
They got down awkwardly, hanging on to the edge of the sill and dropping onto the road. Dorcas lowered himself gingerly onto the brink and sat with his legs dangling over the drop. It looked a long way down. Below him, Newty prodded Sacco respectfully on the arm.
"Herr Sacco," she said nervously.
"What is it?"
"Look at that metal rail thing over there."
"Well, what about it?"
"There's another one over there," said Newty, pointing.
"Yes, I can see," said Sacco testily.
"What about them? They're not doing anything." "We're right in between them," said Newty. "I just thought I should, you know, point it out. And there's that bell thing ringing."
"Yes, I can hear it," said Sacco irritably. "I wish it would stop.
I just wondered why it was."
Sacco shrugged.
"Who knows why anything happens?" he said. "Come on, Dorcas, please. We haven't got all day."
"I'm just composing myself," said Dorcas quietly. Newty wandered miserably away from the group and looked down at one of the rails. It was bright and shiny, and it seemed to be singing. She bent closer. Yes, it was certainly making a faint humming sound, which was odd. Bits of metal didn't normally make any noise at all, not by themselves, anyway. She looked up at the lorry. As she stared at the lorry stuck between the flashing lights and the shiny rails, the world seemed to change slightly, and a horrible idea formed in her head.
"Sacco!" she quavered. "Sacco! We're right on the railway line, Sacco!"
Something a long way off made a deep, mournful noise. Two deep, mournful noises, one a little deeper and more mournful than the other.
Dee-da! Dee-da!
From the gateway of the quarry, Grimmer had a good view of the road all the way to the airport. She saw the train and the truck. The train had seen the truck, too. It suddenly started to make the long-drawn-out screaming noise of bits of metal in distress. By the time it actually hit the thing, it seemed to be going quite slowly. It even managed to stay on the rails. Bits of truck spun away in every direction like a firework.